We have an aviation security analyst and expert with us in the studio, whilst our text message system, and indeed the studio, is erupting in argument over the United plane incident where a 69-year-old passenger was forcibly ejected despite having a ticket because the plane was overbooked. We have Alan Peaford, aviation analyst and chairman of the World Aviation Safety Summit, which is kicking off in Dubai today, to join us. Alan, it's very good that you're here.
Good morning.
It's getting a bit heated in here. What is your take on this?
Well, I think United are wrong in the first place in the way that they handled it. From the very beginning, how many passengers you let on the aircraft is not a very difficult thing to have worked out. And you certainly something you wouldn't see happening here. However, once they were on, I think as some of the debates you've been having earlier, the police were actually at fault with the way that they handled it. Remember that the captain is in charge of the aircraft. You can't take off with more passengers. It's not a standing room only on aircraft. So you've got to have the right numbers on. However, maybe United should have offered more than the $800 that they wanted. It's a supply and demand market. And so United could have done a lot more than they did.
What do you make of the statement that's come out from Oscar Muniz, their CEO, to say that it's upsetting for United and they apologise for having to reaccommodate? Is this the right way to handle it?
It's a wording, isn't it? It's the way that the PR people have handled it in United, and maybe that wasn't very good. I think they need to understand how passengers feel, but you cannot let the mob rule. It's not a question of the person that shouts the loudest is the one that stays on the aeroplane. If they've overbooked it, a number of people have got to get off, and so it's a question of do you pay them more? Should the airline have said this differently? But actually, they've apologised. They haven't just stood behind it. So I think credit to them for doing that. And I think also credit to the CEO of standing behind his own team.
How quickly do passengers and the general wider world forget these sort of things? We saw the United Continental share price rise by 1% yesterday, despite the sort of the storm on social media. How quickly do we as potential passengers forget?
I think passengers forget pretty quickly, actually. We get this mood, we get this Facebook rage on things, and then tomorrow, if United are offering flights at $10 less than American Airlines were offering them, then there'll be a flood of people going there. And I think, let's put it into perspective. It happens every single day, particularly with US domestic flights. They're often overbooked because people don't turn up. And you've got to deal with it. And really, it should have been dealt with on the desk there before those passengers were given boarding passes.
Well, let's look at the other big issue of the aviation world at the moment, at least here, that is the laptop ban on direct flights to the US from some airports. What are you making of the way the ban has been applied? That it differs between the US and the UK and now Australia in what's being considered a risk and what's not?
I think this is a major issue, and it's certainly one that we're going to be discussing at the Aviation Safety Summit today. I mean, we've got airlines coming from around the world. British Airways are coming, Hong Kong Airways are coming. And it's desperately important that we get a voice on this, because the thing is completely wrong. The only security that is going to be generated by this ban is going to be the financial security of American Airlines. I truly believe that this is politically driven more than it is security driven. Now, we know that there is probably a legitimate security issue. We know that there is a threat from those batteries, and if they're tampered into a way that makes them explosive, of course it's dangerous. But we've got to remember that these batteries have been a problem for us, to a point that ICAO and IATA have been talking about banning them in the hold. We've banned them in mass on the hold because of the fire risks. And the danger is that the fire cannot be contained. They can short circuit, they can catch fire. Now, we're asking passengers to make sure that their laptops and their tablets are turned off. Otherwise, there is a huge risk and we can't contain it in the hold. So it's more dangerous than it is being in the cabin.
Okay, you've made two really big points there. Number one being protectionism, and number two being the fire risk, the danger of the batteries themselves. Let's start with the first one. Are you saying that you think that US move, particularly obviously the laptop ban from the UAE and from Qatar, is also or as much about US airlines being worried about competition from our carriers?
I think it's influenced by that, because I think if you look at the UK and you look at Australia, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Doha are not included in any intelligence-led security issues. For the US, the big issue is Etihad, Qatar and Emirates and the trade that they're taking.
That is extremely concerning that something like that could be mixed up in a security ban.
It is. It's very, very worrying. And it's interesting that EASA, the European regulator, and IATA, who are one of the partners, actually, in the Aviation Safety Conference, they're equally concerned about it. Isn't the right way. They should be involving the industry in the discussions about it and how to deal with it.
What do you think needs to happen there, Hen, Alan?
We need to be talking more. We need to be talking to governments, and that's one of our goals today, is to get the messages out there. They need to be thinking a lot more about the risk as well as the result.
Talk to me about lithium batteries in the hold. You said earlier that there was a potential danger there. I don't want to be scaremongering, but how much of a danger is there?
Okay, in big terms, the risk is not that high, but it can happen. We saw the incident not very long ago on a flight from Beijing when a set of headphones with the lithium-ion battery caught fire spontaneously and burned the lady's face. That's what can happen with those batteries. Now, the difference is crew are trained on how to put those fires out. They use foam, or at worst, they use soda water. They can deal with it. If that happens in a suitcase, in a hold, nobody can get to it. And that's the risk. Aviation is safe. Look, we had something like 40.4 million flights last year, carried 3.8 billion passengers, and had 10 accidents. So the rate is incredible. You know, it's a 1 in a million chance of an accident. What we cannot afford to do is add risk to get more danger coming into our flights. So that's why it's important. Now, these batteries, traveling in isolation in a laptop that is definitely turned off, is a very, very low risk. My concern is that we are relying on passengers to have the intelligence to turn their machines off and not just leave them on sleep or something, so the battery is heating up and has the potential of catching fire.
Let's look at the local markets. We've often said on this show that the crowded skies over the Gulf are, or soon will be, restricting commercial aviation traffic growth, because we share the skies between military and commercial traffic. And they've got the military has a fairly substantial portion of the skies reserved for them. It's difficult to see how commercial aviation can grow whilst there is that much of the space occupied by military. Is the military likely to be giving up some space so that we can get more commercial planes through it?
Well, you're right, Malcolm. The problem is the bigger area, the bigger slice of the airspace pie is taken
more than
up
50%,
by the military.
Yeah?
It's far more than that. And it's often not used very much. It's used for exercises at certain times. There is a negotiation that's been going on between the air traffic management organisations, the regulators, and the military. And I believe we're starting to see some kind of push through, that there is a negotiation for space to be released at certain times that can be taken back on under NOTAM. However, we've got to remember that national security is important. It's the number one objective of a government, to keep its nation secure. And because of that, the military quite rightly has the need for that space at times. But it doesn't need it 24 hours a day. It rarely uses it at night. And if you think about the Gulf, a lot of the traffic is actually at those peak times at night. So it can resolve it. The technology is getting a lot better. But what we are seeing, and I think this is fantastic, we are seeing civil aviation authorities in the region genuinely talking to each other and trying to make change happen, which we didn't have a few years ago.
What's the sort of typical percentage of the skies are taken up by military in other countries?
Oh, it's about 70% here. It's shared. If you look at Europe now, the military operators sit alongside the civil controllers.
So they fly down the same corridors.
So they fly it together or in separate heights. As a pilot myself, I know sometimes, you know, you can fly in France and you've suddenly got fighter jets flying, you know, 500 feet below you as you're travelling it. But they can do it. They control
it. That's one nuisance, I guess. But another nuisance are drones as well, the pestilential nuisance. We've seen several near misses last year, and Dubai Airport closed, I think, on three separate occasions. What is the international accepted opinion at the moment on drones? How much of a nuisance are they? And what can be done?
Two different things. One is the commercial drone. And I think we've got to get real here. We're going to be seeing a lot more drones coming into our day-to-day life. We're talking about organisations ordering 2,000 drones for deliveries, for moving drugs around to rural areas and so on. That's commercial use. The second thing are the toys. And I think as an industry, we understand that the commercial operations are going to happen, and they will be operated by trained people who understand the concept of controlled airspace. Then we have the recreational drones, which don't understand the impact that they can have. Now, we've talked a lot about bird strikes, and we're going to be talking about that at WAS today. Bird strikes cause a lot of problems. Think of the Hudson River. Yeah. Imagine the difference between feathers and bone and something made with batteries, metal, and so on, crashing into your aircraft.
Yeah.
That's the risk it faces. These drones, recreational drones, should not be above 500 feet. And we should be controlling those.
But the US Air flight that went down in the Hudson, that was a flock of birds. I mean, does one drone do anywhere near as much damage? Can it bring down a plane?
Yeah. If you think about a drone hitting your windscreen, for example, at a critical point of flight, and ingestion into the engine, and some of these drones are quite large. They're, you know, they're bigger than a duck.
What is the answer, though? I mean, we've seen Dubai International have to halt operations even, at great expense, huge inconvenience, because of drones. But is the answer more regulation? Is it education? What is it?
It's both. Education is desperately important. Registration is important. And one of the things we'll see at WAS 17 today is actually how Dubai is dealing with it. And I think if people are interested, look on the Twitter on WAS 17, and you'll see some of the things that are coming up. We're seeing some video on how Dubai is actually going to deal with this. Now, it is possible you can cut the transmission points. You can take control of them. And it may be a requirement for military or civil defence to get involved.
Is that the geofencing option?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And places that are important, like the airports, need that. However, it's not just the airports. If you're getting drones that are flying at 5,000 feet and you're on an approach, then you're in the same piece of airspace. And it should be considered as really dangerous, and people should be prosecuted.
Well, one solution that sort of jumps out, obviously, because military and commercial traffic fly down air corridors, that the drones use separate corridors, that they're allowed to stay within a certain space but not go outside it.
Indeed,
that's one serious option.
That's what we're seeing happening at the moment in Africa, for example, where drones are seen as the future. We're seeing corridors for drones operating and certain height levels working. So it can work, and again, it comes back to collaboration. And you can have areas, as you've always had with model aircraft. You can fly model aircraft in a certain place. But I think because drones have become so popular so quickly, the regulations are hanging behind what's really happening.
As I understand it, is one of the things with sort of recreational drones, it's visual, line of sight. You can't tell how high that is. There's no feedback to the controller. If you had a panel on the controller that told you where that drone was, at what height, you maybe would be able to manage it better. So maybe sort of more feedback, if you like, on the drones and more information on the handset would be a step forward.
Absolutely, and that comes as well with training. You can actually judge the height, and you can certainly judge whether something's at 5,000 feet as opposed to 500 feet. And above 500 feet, you're in airspace. So it can be done. And, of course, it needs, again, its collaboration between the industry and the manufacturers.
Well, just before we let you go, Alan, a couple of texts that have come in our text message system. One from Deepak about the laptop ban, actually, harking back to the beginning of our conversation. He wants to know whether you think that this action will affect Middle East Airlines business.
Yes, I do think it will affect the business because, you know, I do business myself on an aircraft, and I know how much I need the laptop, and it would make you think twice. The good news, I think, for Emirates, Etihad and Qatar is that the American airlines are not flying into the Gulf. So if you are flying to the States from the Middle East, you really do, thankfully, need to use a Middle East carrier.
Is the laptop ban overall making us safer? What's your final thoughts?
I believe it's not making us safer. I believe it's putting us at greater risk.
Alan Peaford is an aviation analyst. He's also chair of the World Aviation Safety Summit, which is kicking off in Dubai today. Thanks so much for joining us.